Okay, the committee will come back to order. Just for the record, when we gavelled in, we had a quorum. We have a couple of members missing. They will be, a couple of members who will not be here today, and we have a couple of members that will be showing up here in just a few minutes. This is the Committee on Reform and Redesign Subcommittee of the State Gov. We have the big Mr. Chair himself presenting a bill today. Senator, would you like to tell us what we've got before us?
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. We're going to talk a little bit about Senate File 1639, the bill that's before you today. I know out of committee we made some we made an adjustment to that. But what I would like to do to start this off and let this subcommittee know what my intent and what I would see as the intent of this bill, so that we're clear as we hear from our commissioners and agencies as we move down the road. First and foremost, Senate File 1639 reduces the size of the cabinet-level commissioners. It allows the governor, via his executive authority, to regroup all functions currently in place under the newly reduced cabinet head positions. And we need to realize that this does not eliminate the functions of each agency at all. I believe that over time, the newly grouped functions, with them grouped, each commissioner should see where the overlap redundancies exist and should be able to take steps at that time to improve quicker the efficiencies of the different agencies. This model of cabinets, to be open and honest with you, I've taken a report off the shelf, and I'm sure some that have ever gone back to Governor Carlson's core reports. So what's happening today is doing something that should have taken place 20 years ago instead of being shelved. So often we do studies, so often we have reports, so often they collect dust. For what reason? I don't think anybody really knows, whether that's for fear of political retaliation, or maybe they came out during an election year and were fearful of moving what I believe are good ideas forward, at least to discuss. And I think Senator Bonhoff and I have had some pretty good discussions about being bold enough, as she did, I don't know how many years ago, with OET consolidation, to be bold enough to stand up and say, hey, we cannot continue to do things the same old, same old. We don't have the resources to continue to do things the way we've been doing them for year after year. And in this case, what you see here before you is an attempt to take a look at what was thought about 20 years ago. And that is the intent of bringing this to the subcommittee, because I think we need to have that discussion. I think we need to have our commissioners discuss. And you can see there's some. And I'll just throw this out when you look through that bill. Just as I was penciling it out in my thought process here, how would we consolidate what with what? So I have an idea. Right or wrong, it's a starting point to get better efficiency for the citizens of the state, better economy of services, if you will. For an example, whether it's called the Department of Admin or whether we have a wrestling match between Commissioner Showalter and Commissioner Kronk to find out who's doing what, for better, just for a starting point, can MMB, the Department of Revenue, Department of Admin, all come together and start working together and find those efficiencies? One would think that they seem to do similar things. Can we join them together and build better efficiencies? Commerce, deed, labor and industry. they're all going down with pretty much the same goal. And why wouldn't we be able to bring them together under one agency? Of course, after thinking about, I do know that I've talked with Representative Downey in the House, who's carrying the same bill. We spoke a little bit further, and with the uniqueness of the Department of Transportation, we're thinking, you know, that's an animal by itself, probably needs to be maintained that well, that way. The other thing this bill does is to put in some levels of compensation, if you will, to control. And it's interesting that we have, not that I'm promoting any increases here. I am not. But one needs to take a look at. We have a state and a governor that's running a $60 billion company. And, of course, being a businessman, I think I focus a lot of things around that kind of thought process. And we compensate that governor at approximately $120,000 a year. And this bill, based on what the governor is making, would also take a look at a percentage of where the cabinet-level positions would end up being, whether it be 95% or 85% of the governor's salary. But it's time. And I need to thank Pat Anderson for when I was first elected. She walked into my office and she said, "If you want to read something here," and I truly asked the subcommittee if you would get a copy of the core reports. There is some unbelievable information in those core reports, and when you start reading them, you go to yourself, "Wow, today would have been so different if we would have instituted some of the items that were they had so much foresight in those reports," is what I'm trying to say. Had we, you know, and I keep looking at Senator Bonhoff, because when you're talking IT, you have to think way out there. And that's what we're trying to accomplish. And I'm hoping that we can do this without the attacks, and I call them attacks, by media, by certain individuals thinking that we're just trying to destroy what's going on today. And that is not the case. And I think Commissioner Showalter and Kronk and Franz and understand that that's not our intent. Our intent is to get the best out of the best that we have here. And the only way we can do that is to take a look at things that have been brought up in the past, things that have happened in the past, suggestions from very great minds of the past who seem to have forecasted the future, and to try to move forward in our busy schedules, in our lack of, in the tightness of the finances that we have before us. That's the intent of this bill. That is the only intent of this bill. And there's plenty of great minds sitting around this table and behind me that I think we need the discussion. And that's how I would like to move forward, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Benson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Perry. The core reports, I apologize, I'm not familiar with them. Is that an acronym? Is it how would I go about finding the core reports?
Well, they were commissioned by Governor Does anybody know exactly? Carlson. Does anybody remember what the actual name of the acronym?
Senator Perry, yeah. We have wonderful staff.
They could probably find it for you.
Efficiency.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Commission on Reform and Efficiency.
That's what it was, yes. Okay. 19, I think it was early 90s, 92, 93,
90. Senator Perry, I'm told it's 93. Senator Tizik.
Mr. Chair.
Senator, could you move your microphone? We can't hear you.
Sorry, Mr. Chair and Senator Perry, do you know if they're online or does staff know if they're online?
They are online. I saw it on a little smartphone right here. So.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Perry, thank you for bringing forward the legislation, because I think it does give us a jump start in having the conversation that we're all really here to have. I guess I question the approach that's in this bill, and I just want to tell you some of the concerns I have with the approach. Seems to me that that with this bill, we're still talking about a vertical siloed approach because you're taking the various agencies and you've got a hypothesis that is, you know, we could do this more efficiently, effectively by merging vertical entities together and they'd still be vertical. And I don't think that's where we'll end up if we actually do the investigative work necessary. And so I step back and think, what is the best practices process for discovering how to work with such a huge enterprise as the state of Minnesota? And I think if we look at large corporations, and I've actually gone out and met with senior executives in these large corporations to say, how did you do it? And one comes to mind is Cargill. And if we could have the gentleman who spent 2 hours with me come before this committee, I think you guys would be fascinated because he did share his process. And they started out by hiring a consulting firm to look at the functions of every major thing they did. And they looked at these functions all over the world because they're a global corporation. And so they went to all of the various places, and what they discovered is that there was so much overlap in every single, actually headquarter entity by function. And so they ended up, after spending a year of doing that, determining that what they wanted to do was not to consolidate companies or divisions, but rather to consolidate functions. Mm-hmm. And so I think that if we started from, you know, figuring out what strategically is the process to learn, you know, I do want to read that core report, but things have changed since then because of the advent of the web and technology being such a driving force. So the solutions that were the best solutions back then might not be our best solutions. So I would rather see us leave, if we could end this session having clearly identified a process by which we investigate how to reorganize and redesign state government and, for that matter, other large, you know, government-provided service agencies, I think it would, so that when we come back next session, we actually have a blueprint. That's where I guess I'd like the redesign and reform conversation to go, and just making sure we have the very best experts helping us figure out what is the path forward, rather than us just kind of throwing something against a wall and thinking this is how to do it.
Senator Bonoff, and we will have the opportunity to have that kind of a meeting with those people in here. I know you're familiar with Gopal.
Yes.
Gopal Khanna, and he and I have discussed using his connections to get some people in here, and certainly we will include you and other members of the committee if you have suggestions of individuals and executives or corporations that can provide this committee some insight in what they have done and how they've done things and restructured and reformed. We'll have that opportunity before this committee. Senator Benson has a question before that. Senator Perry, did you have a response?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Bonoff, I couldn't agree with you more. And I think that's really what my intent is, because we have a lot of bipartisan support for efficiencies. I mean, that's how we moved the OET bill through the way we did. It's because we know. Going back to the core report, I think it's a basis because they were dealing with what was going on, but they were also looking into the future. And, even in one area, when you talk about pensions for the state of Minnesota, had we followed some of their suggestions back then, I think we would have even been in a better place than we are today. So I appreciate what you're saying, and I think that's the path. You articulated it very well, that I see this moving forward. And we can only do that by remembering one thing, to keep our minds open and to realize that this is for the betterment of the entire state of Minnesota, not just one group here or there. This is everything, and I appreciate your comments.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Perry. Actually, my addressing is more to Senator Bonoff. Excellent points, and I know you've been thinking about this a long time. And what I see here is a vertical alignment of mission that needs to be absolutely supported by horizontal alignment of key support functions. Because just as in a corporation, you would have large divisions that operate, particularly global multinational corporations, they have, perhaps they have a consumer-based food delivery, but they also have a more corporate or larger organization. Those two work parallel, but they're supported by a solid functioning infrastructure. So I hope that as we go forward with these conversations, we keep in mind that our citizen-facing mission needs to be very clear, but supported by solid horizontal integration. I think we tend to creep into creating more little pockets of authority and detail, and we're at a very bipartisan point where we say we need to clean this up and we need to align our priorities with what we'd like to accomplish for Minnesota. So I think both things can truly happen. But I understand Senator Daley's bill addresses more your point. And so I just don't want to lose the mission of Senator Perry's project here.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, members, if there aren't any other questions, I do know we have some commissioners here that would like to speak. I know I saw Commissioner Showalter and Commissioner Kronk. I don't know if do you want to come up individually or
Let them come up on both sides of me here.
Want to come up and flank the senator?
If anything, it's a good photo op, Mr. Chairman.
There you go.
I'm not
going to
do that.
And I apologize. I didn't fully scan the crowd before we came in. Are these the only two departments that we have that want to testify today?
No.
Okay. I just want to make sure I got that. Whoever wants to go first?
You set us up. If I may, Mr. Chair, pleased to be here. For the record, my name is Jim Showalter, Commissioner of Management and Budget. We have several departments that are here, and appreciate the chance to just respond to the bill. I had, as a couple of days ago, I indicated some concerns and opposition to the bill, and I appreciate the tone and the approach that you're taking here to have a discussion, try to understand some of the implications of this bill. So I'll try to follow along those, give you some specifics of why we have concerns, and hopefully that will launch into some more discussion. I think Commissioner Kronk has additional concerns, so we'll just try to flow along. I think the first thing I would really encourage this group as you're trying to think about government reform is to be specific. You know, the fact of the matter is the core report was an effort by the Carlson administration roughly 20 years ago, and Governor Carlson looked at those recommendations and didn't implement all of them. Governor Ventura had those recommendations in front of didn't implement all of them. Governor Pawlenty had those recommendations, didn't implement all of them. And now to say, you know, Governor Dayton should do this using the existing reorganization authority that's been there for all of the previous governors is, I think, a question of why that problem and that set of questions is now being asked. When we want efficiency, we have to be really specific. There have been reorganizations during that period. There have been changes. The agency that I am commissioner of is a result of a merger of the employee relations and finance departments. But again, we had extensive discussions to consider what the implications were, what the goal alignment, what the missions were compatible before you made those steps. The broad-scale changes that are contemplated in this bill, I think, really skip past a lot of those discussions, and that's why those very core reports haven't been there before, haven't been implemented yet. So as we talk about reform, I think it's a shared responsibility for agencies to come up and tell you, give you some of the specifics, and for legislative leaders to say, here's where we want to go, and to work that through. But, you know, at this point, this says we want to go to fewer agencies and really doesn't talk through the implications. As I was looking through just sort of my little bits of management-y kind of files and some of the people I looked at, I went to Professor Bob Bain, who is a professor at the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard, and he is all about performance management. He is all about metrics and reform and leadership. That's his stuff. he doesn't use the word stuff. But one of his pieces was on the reorganization trap. And he cited an outsider coming in to the federal government talking about a complete reorganization of the executive branch to eliminate waste and efficiency, overlapping, and confusion activities. He put his best and brightest people on the task. His name was Jimmy Carter. And as a result, you know, there was some changes. There were some changes. The Department of Education got broken out of HEW. There were in other agencies like the Trade Technology and Industry Agency that were consolidated and then later broken up again. But the myth here is that there's some perfect alignment. There's not a perfect alignment. What we would be better off spending our time and attention on is the performance, the management questions in very specifics, looking at those issues. So I would commend to you that that's where we should go. The bill in itself has a couple of specific problems I'll bring up, but Commissioner Roy will talk about some, Commissioner Cronk will talk about some, and others could too as well. In terms of public safety, no other state has some of the same catch the bad guys and incarcerate them in the same function. If we're going to try and merge public safety and corrections, I really question whether that's a good strategy. As you mentioned, Mr. Chair, transportation has concerns. There's federal law that says there should be a Department of Transportation out there. So there's issues with federal funding and whether we would be able to capture that in the way that we have before. Conflicting roles. Ask the Department of Health. They're the regulators of many activities in the Department of Human Services, which is already pretty big, by the way. And they do a lot of payments and do a lot of service provision. Do you really want to have those roles all incorporated in the same function under the same head? And data privacy. We all have different types of information. And, again, it is from the executive branch side, it is a constant worry and a thing to manage. As you get bigger organizations, you will have, again, more Chinese firewalls, more issues over data privacy and concerns from the legislature and from the public as to who has access to your tax, health care records, and other things. So there are some very concrete things that get raised by this bill. But I also just want to point out, I think the process of being specific, being very thoughtful about what you're trying to do, what's the scale we're trying to achieve? You know, is it at a Veterans Affairs size, or is it at a DHS is too small and we need to make it bigger? You know, what are the kinds of things that we're trying to get at? And we'll be happy to discuss that more. I'd like to turn it over to Commissioner Cronk, my colleague, for additional comments.
Sure.
Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'll just say a few things, particularly in light of Senator Bonhoff's comments of the importance of doing more investigation and being specific about what it is we're actually trying to achieve. I'll specifically refer to the potential fiscal impact that this may have on this type of consolidation. Last year, the Department of Administration did do a fiscal note on it, and the one that we submitted this year, we want to make sure that we're working with the author to understand the assumptions that would go into this. But we all have to be clear that there would be an upfront cost to do some of this reorganization work. And so, you know, Commissioner Showalter can speak to what types of costs were necessary when the Department of Finance merged with the Department of Employee Relations, but it wasn't insignificant. And so with any large-scale reorganization, it has to be understood by all that there is an upfront cost to be doing that. And so we'll certainly revisit the fiscal note from last year, but then work with the author to make sure that those assumptions are clear, but that the implication for any upfront costs are understood by all parties.
Any questions at this point, members? Senator Perry?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to make sure everybody understands that we as legislators, being in the public as much as we are, constantly hear, can these departments be brought together? Why can't they? Are you talking about it? And so, again, I just preface this. This is my way of – and sometimes it takes takes doing a bill – to bring everyone to the table, because they know there is a serious nature to that. And it also helps put you on a priority list of how you move forward. And I know our time is very, very tight and important. But I can only say that when I think about the OET bill and what's happening there and how we're trying to bring all these silos together and everything, I don't think we want to miss out on the opportunity to use the intelligence of our commissioners, and maybe push them a little bit more to say, you know, maybe here's a function that maybe can be done together. And so again, I want to continue to remind people of that, because this is to me a think tank to move forward with all the reforms that were passed last year and as we move forward this year.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And commissioners and Senator, I cannot emphasize enough that going through the OET process is the perfect time to look at strategic realignment. And I'm asking you, in this environment where we are really trying to be bipartisan, to not make your first action, this can't be done, to make it what is possible. Huge opportunity here, huge risk if we don't take some action. And whether it's in the form of Senator Perry's bill or in the form of governor's initiative, and maybe you need a bunch of us around a table some Saturday afternoon to really start architecting things out to move forward, whatever it takes, this needs to happen. And now is the time to do it. You know, you talked about the Department of Health. There's huge overlap with the Department of Agriculture. Let's take a look at if we need redundancies, if we need to shift where people are, shift what the functions are of those agencies, so that we leave this process, so that in 5 years, the state of Minnesota, our government, is renowned in the country for being efficient and well thought out and citizen facing and effective. And so I'm asking you to please make the default open minds and action. And I will help in any way I can, whether it's in support of this bill or in support of a governor's action.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Cronk, what do you think would get us the kind of process that would give us a roadmap for a strategic redesign, both by function and looking at the broader questions that Senator Benson raised in terms of agency mission as well? In your, you know, if you were to envision a bill or a process, what would that look like, and what tools would you need in order to accomplish that?
Mm-hmm. Commissioner, thank you. Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, certainly we need more data. I think it's going to be important before we pursue any strategy, and just as you and your fellow senators have recommended, we're not going to dive into anything without knowing exactly where those deficiencies can be gained. But right now, there's really no baseline of information to determine that. And so what really I'm looking to achieve, hopefully in the next session, in this session, would be to get resources and the capacity to be able to do that type of benchmarking. It's going to be important that the state has a baseline to determine where those efficiencies can be gained, either across agencies, across functions, but right now that information does not exist. I think we're building the support through our SWIFT implementation, through the IT consolidation, but you know there is not, and Commissioner Showalter can correct me if I'm wrong, but there is not that type of information out there, and we need to make sure that we're identifying what we have right now before we can go forward.
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Senator, if I could add, I absolutely agree with Commissioner Cronk, and that baseline data is really critical. But I also want you to just think about the human dynamic here as well, that this is also a cultural change. You know, having gone through the finance-doer-employee relations merger, there's just a very personal and important dynamic of helping state employees both feel valued and supported in the process of delivering quality public services. And that is also part of what, you know, we're trying to do. And that doesn't take reorganization. That also just takes how we approach public services and in valuing them, in talking about the contributions of people, and trying to monitor those projects. You know, Commissioner Cronk and I and Commissioner Parnell, through the support and leadership of the governor's office, are working through all of the projects, all of the things that state employees are already doing to make better government. And that's also part of what we're trying to get to. Now, in our time here, you know, we know we're tourists. State government will be here a long time. Core report's been around a long time, but part of what we can also do is change the attitude and the approach towards governments by saying employees are part of the solution, and employees have insights and can and should be part of the projects and the specific reforms that are going on, because they also know what's happening, and they have good insights. Let's open up this dialogue so that it's not all at the 10,000-foot level, but that we know of end-to-end processes that we can make better. Let's manage those. Let's celebrate those. Let's all talk about those, you know, this week, next month, next year. I think we can get there as well. And so I just want to, again, get a little bit more granular and say that, you know, that's also part of the conversation, a part of the human dynamic we need to get to.
And Commissioner, Senator Bonhoeff and I had a little interchange earlier talking about Mr. Gopal Khanna and some of his friends and connections that he can bring, convince to come before this committee and share some of their knowledge with us. And I'm sure some of those things they will tell us will be similar to what you're talking about, the cultural effect and how to approach things properly when you're doing significant changes and whatnot. And I would suggest maybe when we get to that point, it might be beneficial for you or maybe all the commissioners to be here, listen in. Maybe we even have you at the table and you can engage in the Q&A. I'm certainly open to that. That I think could be value added for everybody. So we can talk about that more later. But there, we all have a lot to learn, and certainly the legislators at this table don't know everything. At least I don't want to speak for all of you, but I don't know everything. Kind of on the same tack as Senator Benson. In my office, as a state legislator, often we get requests from constituents to fix something that we don't have the ability to fix. And my approach has always been never to respond with, "I'm sorry, I can't do that," period, and stop. It's always, "Well, I can't do this, but here's an option." And what I would request, similar to what Senator Benson is saying, is that if there's something we want to do and your response is, "That can't be done," well, give us an option to at least move us in a good direction. And I think that's a very beneficial approach for everybody. But Senator Benson, you know.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Commissioner Showalter, I understand what you're saying about employee input, and that is critical, and cheering some of the good process reform that is happening. Absolutely. But one of the risks of, in particular, lean manufacturing is that if you don't know that a process is part of a good strategy, you can re-engineer the heck out of it, and you've just wasted a whole bunch of time. Mm-hmm. And so I want to make sure that while we talk about the granular and praise those successes, that we step back and say, does this fit with where Minnesota is going for the next 20 years? So I appreciate your comments, but don't want to get stuck in the weeds too much at this point.
Commissioner Showalter?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I appreciate that, and I understand that. Not exactly widely read report of a more recent vintage, but from the last state government bill MMB was asked to put together a report on performance management and really having multiple layers and levels of looking at that because, you know, Senator, to your point, you can have the best program and the leanest, most efficient program, but if it's pointed in the wrong direction, it doesn't work. And so you really have to have multiple levels of management approaches. We completed that report. It certainly asks a lot of questions. It doesn't provide a detailed roadmap to perfection, but I think it does say that there's a lot of effort that's necessary to get there and that we should all be on that road. We should not confuse the 10,000-foot questions of Minnesota milestones or societal changes with the questions that managers and commissioners have to deal with about their program effectiveness, and they shouldn't confuse those with the work of the individual employees. And we should have conversations at each of those levels along the way. And that is what we're trying to build. That's the kind of conversations and reforms and specific projects through better government so that it's not just big stuff but doesn't get done, but we can talk about the large-scale reforms along with the smaller things.
All right, members, if there's nothing more at this point, we do have corrections that would like to talk to the committee. Commissioner Roy. Welcome to the committee, sir.
Morning, Mr. Chair, committee members, morning, Senator.
How you doing?
It's always a pleasure to talk about the Department of Corrections, and I've had the good fortune of being the commissioner for the past year. I say good fortune because I inherited a department that strives to be excellent and efficient and has achieved those qualities. About 35 years ago, I would guess in this room, there was a similar discussion going on about the delivery of correctional services and the efficiencies and how to best do it. At that time, the nation was in the grips of prison building, expanding the infrastructure of prisons, and the thinkers in Minnesota, legislators and community members, got together and decided that creating a mega agency, as many other states were doing, Department of Corrections, centralized in the Capitol, was not the approach they wanted to take. The adoption of the Community Corrections Act was a philosophical change in how correctional services were to be delivered in Minnesota. It reserved prisons and valuable, expensive prison beds for those most serious offenders. That philosophy has brought us to a point of excellence today. And the handout, which has the DOC logo on the top, I think clearly demonstrates and provides metrics for you to consider as you can look at reorganization or some method of better delivering correctional services. It's difficult for me to comment on the future. This particular bill doesn't necessarily, it's not specific as to what would happen to the Department of Corrections. So I won't speak to the bill, but I will speak to the success that we've had under this current model. When you look at the cost effectiveness of the Department of Corrections, especially in terms of the incarceration rate, we are 49th in the country in terms of the number of offenders in state prisons. We are 49th in the percentage of general fund going to fund state corrections. Some states, you can look at the check mark there, 2.5% of our general fund going towards corrections. Some states, it's as much as 20%. We are in a rare group of states that are experiencing no overcrowding. We aren't challenged in terms of our prison populations or dangerousness of our offenders. And I'll point to the bottom bullet in that group, which is really significant. We are the 47th lowest in the number of state personnel devoted to corrections, the national average at 11%. All of these statistics note and are the result of a philosophy that was adopted in this building about 35 years ago. I've been in this business 38 years ago. I remember when that Community Corrections Act was adopted. I remember when the sentencing guidelines were adopted. Both of those strategies have postured us as a department as not only efficient, but also demonstrating excellence with no negative results in terms of recidivism. It is always, and I'm focusing on the words that Senator Perry used, efficiency and excellence. And I sit here proudly today to be part of that department. We have a philosophy that accepts that people can be rehabilitated and returned to the community. And when we consider that 95% of the offenders that are in our prisons do come back and live with us, it is so important that we do good programming with them. And you will see some examples of that good programming on the bottom. I'm not going to go specifically program by program, but you can see that we are more than a turnkey agency. We just don't turn keys and lock people up. We try to effect some changes in our clients. I hope that people leaving our facilities, leaving our supervision, are always improved and are better neighbors, better children, better students. And that kind of work is not something that when you think about corrections, it's usually the prison bars and the big brass keys. But believe me, most of our effort goes towards rehabilitating the folks that we have in our charge. I will note also that this past decade, there's been significant growth in our prison population. We have tried to build capacity within our facilities, yet maintain quality of care. We have not experienced prison building, and I mentioned that before. So many states are in real critical postures right now in terms of building. So I hope that that is recognized. I am not a fan of big government. There are certain functions that state government should perform clearly, and prisons certainly are one of those functions. But creating larger state bureaucracies is not necessarily the way to solve problems. As I talked about community corrections, that was actually the antithesis of that notion, that the service delivery is best at the local level since most offenders return home. I mean, it was a natural philosophy that they adopted, and it was very effective. And I've also benefited by working in small agencies. I've been a government employee for 44 years, actually. I started at age 16. I was a ditch digger with the park department. It was a small unit. I knew what the task was. The mission was well-defined, and at the end of the day, I knew what progress I had made. As I have continued in my government employee for all these years, moving to larger and larger organizations, I find that things disappear, and that is nimbleness. Larger units of government are not nimble problem solvers. The public transparency disappears. It is too easy for bureaucrats to get lost in the bureaucracy. So I hope that any reform keeps those notions in mind. We have, at the end of the day, we absolutely have to believe that we're delivering the best service for our citizens. And I believe the current methodology of correctional delivery is providing that. I should note that there has been a huge effort within criminal justice to consolidate information sharing strategies. You folks have funded CrimNet over the years. And that is so critical, and it is such an example throughout the nation that people just are amazed that we share court information, prison information, arrest information. It's all consolidated, and that's the kind of efficiency that I believe you are looking for. That exists. We are an example for the country, and I'm so proud to be a part of that. I am very cognizant of your time, and I would gladly take questions if you have any for the new commissioner.
Any questions, members? Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, not a question, just a comment. Thank you so much for your service, Commissioner, and thank you for your outstanding excellence that you've brought forward today in terms of this report and the numbers.
All right, if that's it, thank you, Commissioner. Is there anybody else that is wanting to speak to this piece of legislation? Senator Sharon?
Thank you. I'm a little late, so I didn't hear all the beginning of it, but I'd like to speak to my interests here. And I think that seeking the efficiencies that create cost savings for our taxpayers is critically important. I don't think that should be our only goal here, that there are other factors that have to be taken into consideration. And I just don't think wholesale elimination of departments is the methodology to achieve that objective. I just hope in the process as we're doing this that, as Senator Benson said, that in the course of dealing with change and culture, that we don't lose sight of the fact that the goal that we want to achieve is for a better service delivery for our taxpayers, that's the priority, and that even though change is difficult for those of us who are have been committed for a long time to the ways we've been doing business as state employees, that we have to change, and that those that are in leadership positions have to demand that. And I've been a part of state employment, so I know what it means to try to ask to be changed to do things differently. But I think that in our efforts to reform, that we have to acknowledge that there are overlapping functions between the departments that we're talking about. Not that elimination of them is necessarily the answer, but they do have overlapping functions. And we have to reorganize, but understand at the same time that their divisions have a unique lens through which they view problems and through which they offer either objections or suggestions for how a problem be resolved. And we don't want to lose the various stakeholder lenses as a problem is reviewed in any kind of redesign. So in the design of a system, we need to continue to allow for that process to occur, but establish authority within the reorganization of the system that somebody gets to make a decision about what the priorities are and that a answer is given to the customer in a timely and effective way. And that this I think Senator Bessem was referring to is between across the silos, the horizontal process is what I think is driving people crazy when they say, can't you get rid of some of these departments? What they're really saying is, I have to go to this one and then to this one, and then that one says this and this says that. That really, from my perspective, is where we need to, behind the counter, resolve the issues so that our taxpayers, our persons seeking to interact with us, have a less complicated experience. And then on this side of the desk, that we allow the various lenses to continue to review them when there's overlap between ag, environment, and the Pollution Control Agency, but that there is a process where somebody says, we're going to weight it this way and we're going to make a decision in a timely and effective way. So that's what I'm looking for in all of these redesign packages. I know that we're going to listen to Senator Daley soon here, and I think there are elements in that that get at what it is that I am concerned about as well. That's what I'm listening for. And if the redesign contains these elements, I'll be supportive.
Senator Perry? Mr. Chair, I'd just like to wrap up and, you know, thank the commissioners that were here today to help get started with this. And you know, it's interesting to me. Just the whole redesign and the getting together and in a bipartisan way, and the fact that even our governor in his State of the State talked about reform and how interested he was, and how we move forward here. Commissioner Showalter, I think, hit right on. We need to be specific. You know, we need to find what is it. And again, I want to go back to let everyone know that that's my intent, and that's why the bill is bringing people together so that this committee can start working on that. This is not project that happens in 30, 60, or 90 days. I think we all realize that. This is a project that will go on for years. But again, because I have seen so many things on the shelf collecting dust, and we as legislators need to be bold enough to take them off, blow the dust off, and say, what can we do to better follow what Senator Sharon was saying, or any of us here today. And I appreciate the openness. I appreciate the open mind, and I appreciate everybody just taking a breath as we take a look at everything, because it is and will be affected by the OET consolidation and how things come together. So I thank you for your time for that.
Thank you, Senator. I'll ask again, was there anyone else that wanted to testify to this bill? Okay. I don't see anybody, so it looks like we're done with this. We can move on to Senator Daley.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Carlson.
While we're waiting for Senator Daley to get set up, where will we go with Senator Perry's bill? Where will our next follow-up be? And where are we going to – where are we going? Do we have a path? Do we have a plan?
Senator, I spoke with Senator Perry yesterday and again this morning, and his intent on his bill, at least for today, was to get everybody to the table and start talking, to hear some of what can be done, hear some of what can't be done and why. We heard a little bit of that today. Exactly where that goes forward in the future specific to his bill might be somewhat up to Senator Perry, what he might or might not want to do with that. And that might or might not include that particular piece of legislation. But this committee, that's the question before us in the context of Senator Perry's bill and outside the context of Senator Perry's bill, where do we go forward with reform and redesign? And I don't have the exact answers for that. And quite frankly, I don't want to impose any answers. I know I'm the chair, but I don't want to impose any answers. Hopefully we'll come together collectively with some good ideas and get a few things done this year and take that again into next session as well. Senator Daley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Good morning, everyone. I have Senate File 933 before you, and I refer to that as the Back Office Consolidation Act. And just to set the tone, I'll follow up with what Commissioner Showalter said earlier, and that is that in this effort, we want to make sure that our state employees know that they are supported, that they are valued, and that they're part of this process. They're part of the solution and definitely a part of the process. Secondly, I follow up with what Senator Bonoff said in previous testimony with respect to Senator Perry's bill, that she had conversations with several large corporations, including the largest privately held company in at least Minnesota. And in that conversation, they suggested to look at functions. They discussed so much overlap by function rather than looking at things vertically that perhaps by function would be a better way to look at things, to not consolidate vertical silos, but to consolidate by function, and that redesign with government so that we have a blueprint is a smart way, the right way to go forward. And at the One Minnesota conference, we talked about a lot of different things, and shared services was one of the items that we talked about. We didn't get into exact details like this bill does, but this was one of the items that we talked about, and it had, I would say, bipartisan support in general, overall. Last year, as everyone knows, and we talked about it last week, the OET consolidation initiative moved us to a shared services structure for our computer systems. And the purpose and design of that is to take overlapping or redundant functions of managing the people and processes for technology-related tasks in the executive branch agencies, bring them into one centralized place to provide those services back to the various executive agencies. So I'd like to transition now to the slides that are in your packet. And if each picture is worth 1,000 words, we've got about 3,000 words here that I can save all of us. If we just flip through these three slides. And as you see on the first slide, the before slide, it's those vertical silos, the various agencies that we have with all of their programs, the back office functions, which include accounting and HR, procurement, all those items that we can move into a shared services environment that are the same. Paying a bill is paying a bill is paying a bill, no matter what department you're in. It's the same process. And then IT. As you flip to the next page, you'll see that with the OET consolidation, we've made that first step. Instead of the IT function being in each silo, we've consolidated it and shared those services and provide them back to each agency. And it's not so important where the individuals and the assets sit. They can still sit in each agency, or if we preferred, we could move those into one building. Whatever makes most sense, in my mind, to the Department of Administration. I don't want to be prescriptive and require them to do it in a certain way. I want to allow them the latitude to do it in a way that makes the most sense. And then move to the next page then, and that is after back office consolidation. Now you've got that IT layer, that foundation, and then we add the back office functions in that similar, almost same type of model. What I should say before being able to do the IT consolidation, we had to do some business process reengineering. And we came up with PeopleSoft as a solution, an enterprise resource planning system. We call it SWIFT, which stands for the Statewide Integrated Financial Tools. People refer to SWIFT a lot. And that was the heavy lifting. That was the hard work that we needed to do from a business process point of view to allow us to take the next step, to do that IT consolidation, to do what I'm suggesting next is the back office consolidation. Passage of this bill would just simply start the process of a similar organizational transition for accounting, financial reporting, procurement, fleet services, human resources, and payroll services. The related people, those assets, those systems and business functions, the overall business processes in those agencies transition to the oversight and the management of Department of Administration. Some may say, well, we haven't done the design yet. We haven't done the work yet. We don't have the data yet. We have to do an assessment. This isn't specific. And I would say to that point, we need to look at what we've already done. We've spent millions and millions and millions of dollars in the initiatives that we've already undertaken. We have a significant amount of data to make those decisions. And with as I suggested before, we've done the heaviest lifting. We've done that hard work, and now we've got a ready-made opportunity for organizational opportunity and operational efficiencies and a significant amount of savings as a result of that effort. Just take you through the bill if I could, and there are two sections I'd like to point out. Everyone has an opportunity to look at the engrossed version, the committee engrossment.
Senator Daley, just wanted to make everyone aware that's an unofficial committee engrossment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 2 describes the services and the personnel which would be transitioned into the Department of Administration. And Section 3 describes the transfer mechanism, which is the executive branch authority to do the job responsibility combination types of efforts, and then to receive the report from the Department of Administration for the changes in statutes that they would need to make to fully implement the overall integration. With that, I stand for any questions that members may have.
Are there any questions at this point, members?
Or for testimony from perhaps the Department of Administration?
Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Daley, thank you very much for bringing this forward, and I think your slides do paint a very clear picture, and it is very helpful. Would you think that doing a cost-benefit analysis to this approach would be and I don't know exactly what you would call it, but really to do the data analytics of what it would cost to go in this, but what the benefits would be, what the outcomes that we would want to accomplish out of doing it. Do you think that that would make sense as a first step rather than just directing that it be done? And I don't have an answer. I'm asking the question.
Senator Daley.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonhoeff, members. Rather than focused on a cost-benefit analysis, I think we have a pretty good idea of the benefits. Certainly, we don't know what the internal costs would be, but I would support some benchmarking efforts to be made to know which of those processes, which of those functions, the overlapping functions, should be done first so that we can sequence it appropriately. Maybe accounting is the first one that we should take on because there is, through that benchmarking study, the most benefits, the greatest yield, the greatest ROI, the return on investment to do that first. And I don't know exactly where the implementation of the OET is, so I would suggest that we do a design first as part of the sequence so it can be benchmarking and perhaps simultaneously a design, and in that it could be determined that accounting is first and then payroll, maybe some HR functions, and at some point procurement, because each of these agencies are doing procurement, and by consolidating that, there would be tremendous benefits. And it's not just a cost savings, but it's also better service internally to each government agency and to our citizens. That this would be very citizen-centric. That is another great advantage of doing something like this. So to not be so prescriptive by requiring Department of Administration to do it exactly in a certain sequence, I'm allowing them to do that benchmarking study, to do the design, not necessarily on the end of the OET implementation, but as we're perhaps halfway through. So that as soon as that's completed, we can continue then with this back office consolidation of these functions for all kinds of different reasons. One, of course, is a cost savings. I have to say that is an important part of this. As so many state employees are retiring, as they're leaving the workforce, there is, I would expect this to be done through attrition. I wouldn't expect it to be, at least primarily through attrition. That would be my intention. Hopefully that answers your question.
Well, one follow-up.
To that, Senator Bonoff?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Daley, you don't have in the language the requiring the benchmarking to be done.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Daley.
Senator Bonhoff, and that's why I bring this and want to have this discussion. I want to work in a bipartisan way to work with DFL senators, House members, the agencies involved, primarily Department of Administration, to have this conversation, to have the dialogue. Let's get this right. I would be open to adding the appropriate language to have that in there, absolutely.
Mr. Chair, Senator Daley, I would work with you on that, and we'll work with Commissioner Kronk and whoever to make sure that we, because I would like us to pass this session no matter what, appropriating money for a benchmarking proposal to go forward.
Senator Sharon, did you have a question?
Yes, I did. I'm trained to. I was listening, and I forget my question sometimes when I listen. Oh, yes. This is just a question in general. As you've studied this, Senator Daley, have you looked at or talked with anybody about the centralized services that were created under the legislation that developed the Minsky system and how they moved progressively through the process of expanding and defining what is best done as centralized services versus keeping those things out on the campuses? And is there a relationship or a lesson that we can learn from that helps us in designing this? We can learn from their mistakes and we can learn from their successes.
Senator Daley.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sharon, I have not specifically spoken to them about their accomplishments, their achievements, their lessons learned, but we do have 20 years or more of lessons learned from a significant number of corporations who have suffered through painful number of years of ERP implementations, SAP, PeopleSoft, and many of the 19 Fortune 500 companies here in Minnesota. Perhaps they all have an enterprise-wide system like we do now. And there are just enormous number of opportunities to reach out to them to have their lessons learned included in what we do. And specifically, Representative Downey had reached out to Best Buy, and they have a senior-level executive that was going to come in and testify about this same bill in the House and share some of those specific lessons learned. And I think we want to do the same, to include them in the conversation and it's not just corporations, so don't think that this is just a business focus. There are many other state governments who have done this. Specifically, Ohio, we've looked at, and they did this in 2007, I believe, completed the back office consolidation of those functions, so we can also incorporate lessons specifically from Ohio and many other states who have done a similar type of thing. We don't have to be leading edge or bleeding edge on this. There are a lot of opportunities for lessons learned from other entities that have done this.
Senator Sherman. Yeah,
thank you. And just I appreciate that that there are lessons to be learned there, but we don't have to all go out of the state and go other places. We have done this in the state and within government, with a lot of pain.
I will reach out to them.
There are lessons about how to do this within government that we can learn from, I think, in terms of expediting this rather than going through the same difficulties if we can avoid them.
That's a great point. Thank you. And I will touch base with Chancellor Rosenstone.
Is there anyone here that wishes to speak to the bill? Any departments or anyone else? Mr. Kronk?
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, I'm Spencer Kronk, the Commissioner for the Department of Administration. Just wanted to say a few quick words. One, I'm very hopeful about the tone that this conversation is having. I think we're all in agreement that we're looking for greater efficiencies throughout state government, and certainly in the area of shared service, we believe that there is opportunities for more efficiencies. I do want to reiterate the point that Senator Bonoff was making about the importance of having this benchmarking tool done. There is relatively little data that's collected on what are the opportunities that we should be pursuing first and what are the benefits from doing payroll versus accounting versus HR systems and in what order. Unfortunately, the bill before you, however, is more prescriptive than we would like. We want to make sure that we have the flexibility based on what information we get from the benchmark to be able to pursuing the areas of shared service that are more that are most impactful for state agencies and provide the most cost-effective services. I want to reassure both the committee and the author that we are in conversation with MNSCU and with a number of partners from the Minnesota Business Partnership, and so we are learning currently about what the best practices out there are. So we're not starting from scratch by any means. I think there's a lot of areas that we can build off of that are currently in place. To summarize, I certainly want to reinforce our shared effort in creating more efficiencies, the desire for having a benchmarking study done, our commitment to looking into all options from the state perspective, and then also I will certainly speak out if this bill, as it progresses, does seem too prescriptive, or the time frame seems too short. We will not be supporting it. We want to make sure that this is done in the best interests of the state.
Thank you. Any questions? Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For both Senator Daley and Commissioner Kronk, would it make sense if we are putting forward language as we go forward on this benchmarking to include school districts' back office functions in the benchmarking study, not necessarily as a as recommending, but if we're doing the benchmarking, is there some efficiency and cost benefit to doing that at the same time? It's been my belief for several years that the back office functions of school districts in particular are so duplicative, but I don't have any data to support that.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner? Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, certainly open to that. I think it might be two different studies, but certainly I think that the more that we can investigate that, the better off we'll be.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that wishes to speak to Senator Daley's bill? Senator Carlson, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Kronk, would you see your role as Commissioner of Admin, maybe as the state's chief reform officer, CRO? We have CIOs and CFOs, and do you think that would fall under the admin department? Where do you see maybe a cabinet-level position that constantly is looking over state government functions across the silos?
Commissioner Kronk.
Mr. Chair, Senators, certainly the philosophy around this administration is that every agency is looking for reform. Every agency, every employee, every commissioner, everyone that is in the work of state government is looking for ways to make their job more efficient. I would say from a strategic standpoint, both Commissioner Showalter, Commissioner Parnell, and myself meet with the governor's office on a regular basis to look at functions like this from an enterprise-wide level. We have a very productive working relationship, and the three of us really our goal is to ultimately serve other state agencies in the most effective way possible to provide value for those state agencies. So I wouldn't say that myself would be the chief reform officer, but you know, there's a great team in place that have been working very productively together. And you know, you saw last week, I believe you heard from Commissioner Parnell, and I believe she reinforced the fact that all three of us, the three commissioners that serve other state agencies, have been very supportive in ensuring that the IT consolidation happens in an effective way.
Senator Daley?
Mr. Chairman, members, Commissioner Cronk, thank you. And I want to assure everyone that I will be reaching out to Senator Bonoff and others and Commissioner Cronk to develop a timeline that works for everyone and a benchmarking study that's included in this discussion, whether we should include schools or not, if that's a different study, but to continue to work together to advance this. Thank you.
Well, Senator, do you want to maybe work on some of that? We can come back before this committee again next week and then send it up to the full committee after you've tweaked it up a little bit?
That sounds good, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. If there's Senator Benson?
No, I just needed to know if we needed a motion to lay it on the table.
Well, we'll just lay it over.
Okay.
We'll just lay it over. Well, thank you very much. And members, we got started a little bit late and then a little bit later, so we're running late. But we do have with us the Secretary of State, who'd like to provide some information for us. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'll be joined today by my colleague, Beth Frazier, our Director of Government Affairs, and a Representative Dan Hudson, representative of the Data Card Company, who's been a very important partner of both our agency, but also, I think, others in state government. To talk about a very exciting way that we see ourselves fitting into this broader picture of reform and reorganization. I just want to say one word. We will be brief, but our office is a small office, but we've been a big beneficiary of the efforts that have already been successfully completed, whether it's the OET consolidation, which is very important to us, the SWIFT. We've been able to partner and turn over our HR function to the Department of Administration. Dana Badgerow, who many of you knew as the previous commissioner administration, really was an administrator who put her focus on reform, and she helped us a great deal in my first term. But we also have been getting a lot of assistance from some companies. I would particularly call out Unisys, who's been very thoughtful in helping us think about the intergenerational transfer of the wisdom and of experience of some of our national treasures, like Burt Black, some of you know. We have people who are incredibly valuable, and their information is unique, and Unisys has been helping us think about how to do that transfer as well. So I really appreciated this morning's conversation and look forward to perhaps sometime offering the perspective of a small agency, but who's been very, very positively impacted by your work and the work of others as well. So today we're have an opportunity to present an idea that really has been around for a while, but it got resurfaced at the very first meeting of our Election Integrity Task Force when Representative Mike Benson asked out loud. He said, what could we find good bipartisan support for in all of the different discussions around election law, election administration? And, you know, the referencing of that looking for broad support really is kind of reinforces the overall climate of that task force and, I think, election administration in general, which goes back certainly to Governor Carlson, Governor Pawlenty, Governor Dayton. Election law is very important and should be changed and upgraded and reformed, you know, on a continuous basis, but on a broadly bipartisan supported basis. So then there's a lot of goodwill to make change happen. There are 30,000 election judges in a big election year. There's thousands of election administrators. There's a lot of citizens who are affected with every change in the policy. So we try to look for broad bipartisan support. When Representative Benson asked that question, Ramsey County election manager, Joe Mansky, who many of you know, responded immediately. He said, absolutely. The section about the electronic poll books in particular, and then Joe explained, and I've heard this before, but Joe in particular has the most experience. He said, look, with the electronic poll books and with other new technology, we can bring into the polling place the photo identification procedure that people are asking for, the ability for the election judge to look either down at an electronic a paper poll book, which is very common. And
we have a handout if there's a page.
I would love to hand these out if that would be okay with the – thank you. Or an electronic poll book, which some of our own state's precincts and other states have been experimenting with thanks to companies like DataCard. But that procedure, which Joe Mansky was talking about, really has come a long ways because the price of technology has fallen dramatically and the price of memory has fallen dramatically. And our ability to use electronic databases of all kinds, Department of Public Vehicles and others, has really changed. And the concept that we're presenting briefly is the notion that we would use the official database of the Department of Vehicle Services to bring the photographs that we have inside of our state's official system into our statewide voter registration system, SVRS, we sometimes call it. That photo then can be either printed on poll rosters or it can be displayed in an electronic poll book in the polling place itself. Thank you very much. And that provides the opportunity for the poll worker to look up, identify the voter, and then to continue with the procedure. There are pluses and minuses to the paper and the electronic system, of course. The paper system is very inexpensive and can be done quickly. The electronic system provides a kind of security and features that our larger precincts. Wright County has very large precincts, some other counties as well. But both of them have the advantage of providing the kind of security that people would like, but in doing it in ways that does not disrupt our overall system. It doesn't disrupt absentee voting or voting by our service personnel overseas. It doesn't disrupt our voter registration system, our same-day registration system. It doesn't disenfranchise anybody. It is also a very secure system because, of course, it's the official data drivers and vehicle services database. And so somebody happens to have a fake photo ID. I understand some of our teenagers occasionally have fake photo IDs. It doesn't allow any of that kind of process. And for the larger constituencies, the larger precincts, the onerous task of all of the data entry after an election has become not just a lot of work, but expensive and with errors in typing and clerical, creating all kinds of other problems. As we try to run against our database, corrections information, Social Security death registry, Department of Health death certificates, all of that data really is dependent on super accurate data inside of the statewide voter registration system, which is dependent on the typing of quite tired election workers after each big election cycle. As many as 500,000 to 600,000 people make use of our election day registration to fix or change their address or update their record within our system. So electronic poll books are the future, no doubt about it. Our townships have been quite vocal about some of the difficulties when they don't have electricity or they don't have certain kind of facilities. But the fact that there's both a paper option for bringing the photo into the polling place and an electronic option means that very small and very large can be accommodated within the same system. One of the benefits that both options bring is that it creates the possibility of a lot of bipartisan working together to figure out. The townships have been very, very vocal in speaking out about some of the current proposals, their fear of being saddled with the burden of provisional balloting. They also use mail-in balloting, and they don't want that eliminated or somehow taken away from them as an opportunity. Our servicemen and others in our military service of our nation have been worried about what happens with absentee voting. They're just questions being raised that can be answered because this system is both flexible, it's scalable, and it's also affordable. It is surprisingly it's surprisingly inexpensive given how the cost of technology and the cost of memory has fallen up until now. As we think into the future, we don't know how this technology will evolve, but what we know is that this approach allows us to be able to incorporate new technology going forward. If it's the retina, the eye, if it's, you know, whatever it might be, having a system that puts the photograph into the polling place, whether on paper, which is very inexpensive, and if you wanted to put big pictures, I bet some of our forest products representatives, lobbyists, would come and testify strongly, or our electronic option, which happens, this one, made by a very successful Minnesota company, and there are competitors, and so there's a good competition. However it might go forward, the thing that's important for me is that, number one, it keeps Minnesota number one in terms of leadership in election administration, and number two, it creates that standard of broad bipartisan support, which Representative Benson referred to, and Governor Carlson and Pawlenty and all the governors before have talked about, which is listening to what people want to see in our system, finding a way to achieve those goals within budget constraints and without disrupting systems that are working very well, either for our townships or for our servicemen and women or whoever, and doing it in a way that then people come forth with the kind of bipartisan support that helps us implement changes more rapidly, more effectively. Implementing a change like this on paper, pretty fast. Implementing a change on a poll book, I've been surprised at how smooth our conversations have gone, but obviously that's more complicated than just paper. But either of these options helps take us into the future, and it helps give us the basis for a bipartisan approach. And both of those things are the things that I feel are the most important to helping us move forward from a redesign point of view. Thank you again, Mr. Chairman and members, for this opportunity, and move to any questions, appreciating that we are on borrowed time here, sir.
Thank you, sir. Senator Carlson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Secretary Ritchie, I happen to live in a mail-in ballot area, and so this is a big concern for me. With the poll book idea, or with the ideas that you're thinking about, mm-hmm. would I be able to walk into wherever I happen to be in the state, and it would recognize me somehow through a database so that if I happen to be on business in St. Paul, if I happen to be outside of my township, in my local city center, I could go in and say, this is who I am. It would register. It would recognize. It would make sure that I haven't already done it in some other city that day, and allow me that flexibility. I'm thinking if we could design a system that verifies who we are and gives us the flexibility, so I don't have to do an absentee ballot or a mail-in ballot, but yet I can walk into a county courthouse, no matter what county I happen to be in, and say, here I am, and today's my day to vote, and I want to vote, but I can't be home. Could you?
Yeah.
Mr. Secretary.
Senator Carlson, without giving my staff a heart attack here on the spot, let me answer your question first with a no, because that's what they want to hear. We haven't thought all that through, but with a very strong yes, and let me say why I say yes. The first part of your question is, could you go anywhere and have your record? We know that this version can easily handle the between 3 and 4 million records, no problem. And in fact, that's our current thinking, is that you would have it. Because there's about 500,000 people who want to change their address. So yes to part of your question, anywhere you go, this could be. This would be a little thicker, but okay. Second, many states, and I often reference our neighbors, North Dakota, but Colorado was the leader, and other states have moved to the voting center concept, which is sometimes it's within a county or a multi-county region. They put the centers in a shopping mall, a student union, a government building, and you come in, and the real trick is not so much can we find you, it's can we then print out the exact ballot for your school district or for your, you know, and the companies, and this is a very important part of election administration, the companies have been incredibly innovative because they're under a lot of pressure. Every state is different, and so you can hardly get any kind of scale. It's a problem for them, and you know, but they have built systems that could provide us with a ballot printer because you can go to our polling place finder right now, put in your address, pop up, make sure you're all okay, pop up your ballot so a printer could, and then securely know that you have either, let's say it's the mail-in, so you've used that procedure, the absentee, or whatever the procedure is, and that you're done, and that, you know, you have now cast your ballot. And, of course, we have procedures for making sure that in that last little weekend, I mean, you know some of this, that we hold some of those absentees who arrive to make sure somebody didn't come in. But in an all-mail, that's not part of the issue. It's all-mail. So this technology, not so much this, but would allow that person who doesn't know you in Kitson County, but who could look at your picture and say, hey, you're pretty good looking, and, you know, because it's 5 years old, and say, we know your precinct, and we can use our ballot printer to print out your exact ballot, finish your procedure, and then mark in there that you have cast your ballot and go from there. What's exciting about that and the real benefit, and I really, you know, there are inexpensive ways to do things, but long term, the savings that come by investing some money up front, and that's the mantra of your discussions, I think, is that then on the other side of the election, there isn't the typing in and all the stuff that has to go on. Your precinct had made this choice to go vote by mail partly from a cost, and you know it had different characteristics. But if you have some technology that really allows you to reduce costs in some ways, it can give townships really the possibility of saying, you know, we might want to say in person it helps us build a crowd, or, hey, we want to switch to a different system. So my IT staff is feeling pushed to the limit on some things, but let me tell you, I think about the polling center option and ballot production and this all the time, and we could go there with the proper amount of kind of time and goodwill and you know, a little bit of money. And we've been also thinking about the money and the cost-saving aspect as well. Thank you.
And your staff is wanting to talk. and please identify yourself for the record.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Beth Fraser with the Office of the Secretary of State. And one thing I do want to clarify is that the idea of vote centers, that is an option, but it's primarily an option for voting prior to Election Day, voting early, because that allows county auditors and some city clerks to be online on the statewide voter registration system so that they can immediately mark that you've come in and that you've voted. And it's our system is set up to have to handle that sort of capacity of the 87 county auditors in some cities. If it won't work on Election Day because we have more than 4,100 polling places. And so having 4,100 connected computers talking is problematic for a lot of reasons. I mean, it's a capacity issue. It's also an issue of there are state parts of the state that don't have broadband. There are polling places where they literally bring in a generator and, like, take out the tractor to bring in the, you know the voting booths. I mean, you know, there are really little, you know, places that couldn't have, you know, an online computer like that. So I think it's primarily an option for early voting. But down the road, not this year, that would potentially be an option.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carlson, I think in your earlier testimony, there's always the yes, we can and no, we can't. And let me tell you, yes, we can.
No, we can't.
Senator Zizek.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Secretary, your assistant answered part of my question because I was going to ask, do you have to print that ballot or do you see in the future where you could go into a polling center, polling location, be it a shopping center or something like that, go online, look it up. You know, you're not going to be able to make it home. And so you go in and they verify that's you. And do you see in the future where they don't have to print that ballot? You can just pull it up online and you can just vote online. And then they just hit a button and the button and that ballot goes back to, you know, whatever county you were from. And then to follow up, do you see in the future when, you know, technology maybe gets a little better and this, I don't know how far in the future is, where you could do it on that same day? You know, part of the issue, she said, is the, you know, 4,000 polling places. But do you see in the future where that is a possibility?
Secretary Ritchie.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I imagine any possible future, but let me take the two things that you've asked really directly. We have a law, and we always have, at least in my lifetime, that we vote on paper, and having conducted a few recounts myself, the advantage of the public being able to see every single ballot ad nauseum is really important. I also will say here that we have been the target of large-scale denial-of-service attacks and SQL injection hacking from China and other places on our business services side, and it is a serious thing. I have very experienced computer staff, and we have been put down 4 days in a row. One morning at 6:31 recently, there were denial-of-service type attacks that were unbelievable. And so I have my own concerns, and thank goodness with the OET consolidation, we are now moved our that part of our security. The security we need now is way beyond the capacity of a tiny agency to provide. So I'm not trying to be negative about the general thing. I'm just aware that the world is a dangerous place, and I have a responsibility to take care of. And so I like our system of paper ballots. And having a ballot printer anywhere in the state that can pop up the ballot and print it is a little bit like we have now, which is when we send our ballots overseas electronically, wherever you are, you print it out, you fill it in, it comes back. We have excellent result with that. And, you know, occasionally it'll get creased or bent and you have to fool around with it and stuff. But basically, I'm very happy with our current system. The question of what might you do on Election Day, everyone is so stressed and busy on Election Day. Hopefully in a mail-in precinct, people have, you know, lots of days in advance. I mean, it's a decision in a township to make that decision. But it's right now limited to very small size, that sort of thing. I do think we have a bigger concern, which is just about on that election day. It's a hole in the process where we hold the absentee ballots, which come in over that last weekend, and look at them after the close, either at night or in the morning, to see if, because maybe you mailed it in. We had floods that wiped out mailboxes. Some of you remember the big floods in Cannon and places, and we had people call and say, I dropped it in the mailbox. I don't know if it got there. We were able to say to those who called, go in and vote if you can, because we will double check. And if your absentee ballot had arrived, it would have been in that hole. The fact that you had voted in person would have been noted, and your absentee ballot would have been thrown away. But if your absentee ballot had arrived, it would be sitting there, and it would be noted, and then you would not be allowed to vote. So you don't want floods. It's an odd situation, but we do have a procedure for handling those odd moments, and we would probably protect those procedures. You know, if there was a cost benefit, we would protect the security procedures and then try to think through, you know, how could technology help us. One interesting thing that we did last time with authorization was that we began a process of tracking your absentee ballot and your mail ballot at certain points. It's not like UPS and FedEx where you can know every minute, but did my application arrive? Did it get sent back? So the tracking process is getting better. That could also help you know what happened here did something happen? Do I need to go in? So there are options for what we can do. But I look forward to the future in lots of different ways with the technology, especially the fact that we can put everybody. And my colleague in Maine, who I'm working with, his office also has vehicle services. So he can actually bring his entire vehicle services database in. And then anyone coming in to register, it's already the photo is in the system. That's a pretty interesting option. You know, we used to have vehicle services and not any longer. But my mind is continually challenged by ideas of what other people are doing to increase the integrity, the efficiency, and to just, you know, take us into the 21st century. I don't want to get behind Maine or any of these other states. So, that we will keep thinking.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I don't see any. Nope. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry to keep on this, but this mail-in thing is.
Yeah.
We didn't really talk about how do we protect integrity on a mail-in ballot under a system. How would you allow a township to continue to do mail-in ballots and yet still provide the integrity of? How would you do that? I know my townships are looking for answers on this.
Ms. Fraser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Carlson. I think the idea behind this proposal is that it would work for people that come into the polling place, and it would work for in-person absentee voting. But the problem with any sort of proposal that involves photographs is that the person's not in front of you. So whether it's a requirement for somebody to take something out of their wallet and show it to you, or whether it's having a picture on a screen, there's no way, if the person's not in front of you, to make sure it's the same person. And so we're not imagining that mail balloting would change very much. Right now, mail balloting is only used in small jurisdictions, those with fewer than 400 registered voters. And with that process, ballots are mailed, non-forwardable mail, to registered voters. And, the voter fills it out and then mails it back in. So we're not imagining that process would change very much.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Interesting. Appreciate the handouts. Members, we don't have anything else on the agenda, so we are adjourned.
Thank you.